here. Home run, Lenny Dykstra.
Stairs rips one into the night. Deep into right. Way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out. It's wacky. Wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to Continued Success, your weekly check-in with the more emotional side of the Hit and Season podcast team here, the Good Fight podcast family. I am Justin Clue, the head guy at the Good Fight, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin.
Wow, last time we talked, what was happening? I believe the Phillies and Rockies were finishing up a four-game set, and
it was since, bad. Yeah, that wasn't good.
Not quite enjoyable. Since then, the Phillies lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets, and
why we don't remember, because that series felt like a million years long. It legitimately felt like a 2-week series, and I looked at my watch. I'm like, what? It's only been a game.
I forget exactly how quickly it is before they play the Mets again, but that was a pretty quick turnaround from the last time. I don't know, maybe the Mets are going to be our why are they always playing the Mets team for this year. Like, 1 year they played the Nationals like 8 times in 6 weeks or something.
That was last year. The year before that it was the Mets. It hasn't, like, we're lucky in that it hasn't been the Braves, because that might kill me.
And in any case, we're kind of in a position now where the Phillies are dangerously close to 500, Liz. I think a lot of people would credit that to who is playing on the team right now. I know that injuries are a part of any major league season. Eventually, you're going to have to tap into your depth, whatever version of it you have. But in the Phillies' case, it's not a lot. They are not doing a great job of filling out behind the awesome team they've assembled. There's not really a whole lot there, and we have learned that the past couple of weeks. Tonight, Liz, the only reason the Phillies are on the board is because Sean Rodriguez was promoted to the big club, and I feel like I remember a lot of people saying in spring training once he was signed that, you know, yeah, he's like spring training camp fodder. He's minor league, obviously, spot filler, and if he gets called up, then the Phillies are probably in trouble. Well, Liz, it's not even May, and Sean Rodriguez has been called up, and the Phillies are kind of, you know, in early season trouble-ish, would you say?
I would, especially since I looked at Sean Rodriguez on the field and actually said out loud, who is that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did not remember him. I thought, well, he must be on the team. He's wearing a jersey and it's got a name on it. Everyone looks like he belongs there. You know, no one's chasing him off the field with a taser. So I'm assuming he belongs there. He's a good looking guy. But who is that? Honestly, it can't be good. None of this can be good right now.
Liz is taking out Craigslist misconnection ads for Phillies she doesn't recognize on the field. You, guy trotting around the bases at normal speed. Me, watching on my TV at home. I got to tell you, it's it bummed me out to see him be promoted,
be there,
you know, be a part of the team. I don't mean that. I don't want to be a personal attack on Sean Rodriguez the way I believe he attacked a water cooler 1 or 2 seasons ago as a member of the Pirates.
Yeah,
but you know
that guy.
Obviously, when your team has Gene Segura and Scott Kingery and Cesar Hernandez, you don't want to see Sean Rodriguez filling one of the middle infield roles. And that's just one indicator of how low in the depth chart the Phillies are right now. And, you know, it's a less fun team to watch when it's not that one team that Gabe Kapler trotted out that same lineup like 8 or 9 days in a row. Yeah. It's a little harder to, a little less enjoyable to watch. And, you know, while I'm not having concerns, it is also just, you know, an early warning sign that, like, look, there isn't a much of a bench. The Phillies elected to go with a smaller bench this year and a bigger bullpen. The bullpen hasn't,
and it's been doing wonders.
I was going to say the bullpen hasn't exactly been reliable, you could say. And now the injury bug infestation has begun much sooner than I think anybody would have guessed. And yeah, exactly what you feared is happening. I mean, Gene Segura is supposed to come back this weekend, and you know that can't happen too soon. But man, it is it's brutal out there.
Yeah, it's not good. And Kingery's 2 weeks away, and every day, like I think Cesar Hernandez did something good this game, which is good. He's been doing a lot of bad things lately, and I've never wanted to see him less. I've never wanted to see Scott Kingery more, and it's a new and weird feeling. And I want it to go away, which means I want to see him. And I think he's like 2 weeks away or something. It's really depressing.
That is a bummer. And we talked on Hidden Season about how much of a bummer that is, that for him specifically, to see him take off as hot as he did and then lose so much time. I mean, if he comes back and it's pretty healthy for the rest of the season, this will barely be remembered. But 2 weeks on top of what he's already missed just feels like such a chunk of time for a guy that was really lighting it up. And it was really encouraging to see him doing well specifically. That is a bummer. But on the flip side of that, the score right now of the Phillies game as we record, it's still tied at 1-1. And while that's not quite endearing on the offensive side beyond the Sean Rodriguez home run that got us to this point, on the other side is Aaron Nola pitched tonight, and the Marlins only have one run. And they do have 8 hits, but you know, by the time he left the game, the Phillies weren't in too bad shape. And, you know, he put together a pretty crisp performance out there. So I think this was the first Aaron Nola. Well, let me ask you, do you think this was the first Aaron Nola start of the season? Like was it last time, I believe we said, oh, this is closer to the Aaron Nola we know and love, but not quite the guy we recognize out there as the Phillies ace. But I think tonight we might have seen him. He pitched 6 2/3 innings. He allowed 7 hits, 1 earned run, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. He got his ERA down to a nice crisp 5.68. And I don't know. I mean, do you agree? Do you think that was Aaron Nola tonight?
I think it was. He pitched into the 7th. You know, so he close. Almost made it all the way through. 1 walk. So close. Just 1 walk. I mean, only 4 strikeouts. That's not great. But I'll take it every day. I'll take a start like this every day of the week. You know, a bullpen should be able to cover, you know, 2 1/3 innings. Every bullpen in baseball should be able to cover 2 1/3 innings. I mean, without that's fucking fair. Up. You know, they should at least be able to do that occasionally. You know, or at least they shouldn't have to. They shouldn't fuck up more than occasionally. Like, that's the point of a bullpen. And hopefully they can hold on and someone can score. Please. I'm like
losing
yelling
this
game day on my
be,
phone. Score
I don't know
someone.
How else to put this, and I'm not even sure what I mean when I say this, but losing this game would be a complete waste of everybody's effing time. Like, it's going to go to extras. I'm going to put it out there that this game is going to go to extras. Just has that vibe.
It's the Marlins. They're not like a sneaky good team. They're legitimately bad.
And I was
they're
about
bad
to say, yeah, okay, you're
their
right. But
coach.
This is the
they're
Phillies
bad.
Team has, you know, a Cesar Hernandez, who hasn't been looking great. Franco batting out of the 8 hole where he's seen so much success. Batting not in the 8 hole where he's seen so much success this year, bumped up to the 5 spot. You got Aaron Altair starting in center field because Roman Quinn got hurt. Surprise. Obligatory mention of how not surprising that is by sarcastically saying the word surprise. Nick Williams coming into the game after that, now Phil Gosselin pinch hitting. But you know, I have to stop myself from being like, yeah, but the Phillies are like, because the Phillies 1-2-3-4 is McCutcheon, Realmuto, Bryce Harper, and Rhys Hoskins. Like, why isn't this team scoring runs? Yeah, it's been a weird, frustrating roller coaster start to the season. I'd say they seemed like they were going to be this big, thunderous offense, and then everybody got hurt, and then they won a couple of late games, and they lost a couple of late games. I mean, you know, they've lost and won pretty much in every way you can win or lose a baseball game, and it's not even been a month yet, so it's been a bumpy ride, I would say. But you know, with the Marlins coming to town, there is one component to this series that I had forgotten about, and that is seeing Jorge Alfaro again, which had a hilarious little asterisk tonight. Is just this more coincidence than anything else, but JT Realmuto put together a long at bat where he battled the Marlins starter who wound up throwing like 19 or 20 pitches in the first inning. And, you know, as he got into that 8-9 pitch territory of his at bat, the fans really got into it. And then it ended with him striking out and the fans gave him a hand anyway. Later in the game, he hit a sac fly that moved Andrew McCutchen from second base to third. So it was just funny to see fans applauding their new shiny catcher for striking out and flying out in front of their old catcher, as if they were like, oh, yeah, you know, we're doing great. Everything's great over here. I don't know if you've checked the standings, but our new catcher is working out really well and everything's fine. Meanwhile, we all saw that picture of Alfaro in spring training looking fine as hell. Liz, do you miss Jorge Alfaro? I mean, I think it'd be ludicrous. I'm not going to let you say, I don't think you would, yeah, but I'm not going to let you say that you'd rather have Jorge Alfaro right now than JT Realmuto. Just from the impact Realmuto has had on the offense and the defense, throwing guys out at second base with what is that, the fastest pop in baseball. But do you miss him? Isn't it just, I found myself getting a little wistful tonight, just being like, oh, yeah. Jorge, it's going to be a shame we won't get to see him grow up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he looks good. You know, he seems fine, I'm sure.
Are you not in the brains of all the players in baseball and unaware of their feelings?
Are they sad? Are they happy? I'm not, sadly. I wish I could be. I would enjoy that. But, you know, I would think maybe he misses it a little bit. But, you know, Miami's not a bad place to be. Miami's not terrible. It is hot and humid, and no one goes to the baseball games there. But, you know, it's a different place. It's a different city. It's a different team. You know, he's not a veteran, but he, you know, I feel like there's no seniority. No one on the Marlins has any seniority.
That ageless wonder. I mean, I think he's technically a statue that's outside the stadium, but they put him at third base. So I'm just kidding. He's hitting .315 this year. So Martin Prado's doing fine. Brian Anderson hasn't been much of a presence yet tonight, but he's always a Philly killer. And Starlin Castro is there. He's a veteran at this point as well. So, but yeah, I'm with you. I think Alfaro kind of, once the initial trade went down, I just got the sense that he saw it as this opportunity to be like, all right, you know what? I'm going to show them bitterly, but just like, I'm going to show them that like, I'm going to adjust to this and I'm going to still be an impactful player. And Don Mattingly had nothing but great things to say about him. They love him. They love his attitude. They love how he comes out every day. Like they love, it sounds like the Marlins love Jorge Alfaro, the Marlins who matter, which is like the guys in the dugout and the manager. He's hitting 260. Yeah. And then 60 at bats this year, he's hitting .267 with 4 home runs, you know, and man, he didn't hit home. He struck out a lot. And he hit, he didn't hit a lot of home runs, but when he did, man, Alfaro hit the living shit out of the ball. And that was always fun, too. So, yeah, I did catch myself tonight thinking a little bit like, that's a shame. I haven't been thinking about him without playing the Marlins, but it was like, that was our catching. That was our catching prospect who we had to give up to get, the best catcher in baseball. Well, as we're talking about depth tonight and how little of it the Phillies have, Liz, something struck me today. It is prospect promotion season, apparently, in baseball, with the Blue Jays finally bringing up Vlad Guerrero, and the Nationals are promoting one of their top prospects. The Angels brought up one of their top prospects. The Mariners are bringing up one of their prospects. I mean, it is the time of year, apparently. It's almost like there's some weird amount of time that a team would not promote one of their best prospects, despite the fact that they would be a boon to the team. And there would be some sort of motivation to keeping them down there smothered in the minors for no reason. I don't know. It's strange, but in any case, did it make you jealous at all, Liz? I mean, Matt Winkleman, our a prospectologist for the Phillies, was talking today about the Phillies system and whether the bounty of it was an illusion or not from the past few years. And he kind of just concluded that no, it wasn't. But at the end of the day, you can't argue that the Phillies have not had like a guy like that people have seen really like across the board outside of even just Phillies fans excited to see brought up to the majors. Did it make you jealous at all with the Phillies looking especially thin lately with their major league depth chart not being the best, but not even having really like, right now the farm system's really mediocre. So did it make you jealous at all to know that like the Phillies don't have a guy like that of their own to promote?
A little bit. You know, this stuff is cyclical and you never know how these guys are going to perform once they get to the majors. I've nothing but hope for Vlad Guerrero Jr., who's just a special player. He's a special player. I can't wait to see what he can do. I love those pictures of him as like a fat-faced toddler, you know, or like a five-year-old who just, you know, he looks almost exactly like he's going to look when he's older.
That's because we know exactly what he's going to look like when he's older. Have you seen any of the footage of him and his, they put his swing next to his dad's swing and how they're exactly the same?
God, I want to see him destroy major league pitching and be everything that he's supposed to be.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, it seems silly for us to complain when all we did all winter was complain about the free agency. And then the Phillies did sign Bieber, and the Phillies have a really good team that's just depleted right now because of injury. And, you know, it's a fairly typical thing for a team to get good and build with through free agency and trades, but then pay for it on the back end in their farm system. But still, you know, I'm thinking about it even like from when I became a Phillies fan till, you know, through the lean years in the 90s and early aughts, and then obviously the golden era of our recent memory, and then the dead period that led up to this year. I don't remember a time when, you know, the Phillies have had a few prospects. You know, they've had Scott Rolen, obviously Aaron Nola, guys who were like impactful big players who wound up paying off in the big leagues. But I don't remember their farm system ever being ranked like in the top three or maybe even the top five. Like, I think when it was at its best, maybe it was like in the top seven. But I don't know. Do you remember their farm system ever being considered like, all right, they did a great job building this, building the minor leagues?
No, the Phillies have never, I don't think, been particularly good. Like, they had the one great stretch where they had, you know, everyone was homegrown. The main core players weren't just homegrown, but they were legitimately all good. You know, Rollins and Howard won the MVP awards, and Chase Utley is, you know, going to be in the Hall of Fame conversation. He was so good and so consistent over such a period of time. Like, it's not just like, you know, the Cubs have a lot of homegrown players, but they have their fair share of, like, they have their own Pat Burrell. But, you know, I think that's like the closest mirror to what the Phillies had in that time. The Cubs have been able to keep up their farm system. They still have a very highly ranked farm system. Phillies do not. Yeah, I don't remember them ever having, you know, like a wave of guys and their system being very well ranked.
No, I mean, and it's funny. I was laughing because I went from Rolen to Nola and skipped over that entire generation that was comprised almost solely of guys from their farm system, like you said. But even then, I mean, you know, they were obviously those guys that were exciting to people when Jimmy Rollins came up and finished second in rookie of the year balloting to Albert Pujols. And like you said, Ryan Howard won rookie of the year and Chase Utley came up. But even then, like, maybe people weren't ranking farm systems back then. There's always that chance, because that does seem something that blew up as a practice with the rise of like the internet and social media and everything. And obviously that wasn't as prominent back then, but you know, yeah, it's just you see a lot of teams get bad and then still have like this highly ranked farm system, like the Padres that have been pretty bad for the past couple of years, but they have this wonderfully ranked farm system that keeps churning out young players that people want to see. And then you have teams like the Cubs that seem like they don't really ever have to pay the taxes that people pay to get good in baseball. So yeah, Phillies just don't seem to fall into either category. But you know what? I don't want to sound like we finally have a team we want to watch and we're complaining about the minors. It's just what's happening across baseball. The Phillies have not had a Vladito of their own, as far as we can remember. But in any case, we'll on this podcast, we don't just complain needlessly like spoiled children about things we don't like about the Phillies. We also chronicle the season of the 2009 Phillies, as we did last year with the 2008 and 1993 teams who were celebrating anniversaries. This year, on the 10-year anniversary of the 2009 Phillies team, Liz and I are chronicling the 2009 season as it unfolds on the same calendar that we are watching the 2019 team. So we will begin this week's version of that right after this. Well, Liz, 2009. Man, when we last left this team, there we go. We were still dealing with the repercussions of Harry Callis's death and how that was impacting everybody on the field and in the booth and all throughout the organization. But we were also talking about how this team just didn't look great yet. Like, it was basically the same team from 2008 with Raul Ibanez slotted in for Pat Burrell. But they really hadn't taken off. By the time they finished the series with the Padres, right after Harry Callis had passed away, they were 5-6. They're about to play a series with the Brewers that we're going to talk about that, didn't make them look much better. And I think people were just waiting to see the 2008 team again. And, that 2008 team obviously won the World Series, but it wasn't like a dominating year. It wasn't like 2011 where it took them till like August to lose a series. There were some ups and downs that year too. So people probably didn't realize they were seeing the 2008 team, but when you have problems like your ace struggling as much as Cole Hamels was, and we're going to talk more about what was going on with poor Cole Hamels in 2009. When your closer is struggling and possibly injured, like Brad Lidge in 2009. I mean, these are some front-facing members of the organization who played key roles who were struggling, and it was easy to pin the blame for the poor start on them. But it was a group effort, and it would be a group effort that would get them out of the hole the 2009 Phillies dug themselves into. But first, around the middle of April, after they played the Padres at Citizens Bank Park as part of a homestand, the Milwaukee Brewers came to town, and the Phillies hoped that this would be the series that would pull them out of their tailspin. The Brewers, after a 90-win season in 2008, had lost a couple of key pieces, including their deadline signing CC Sabathia, starting pitcher Ben Sheets, and position players Russell Branyon and an outfielder named Gabe Kapler, who signed a one-year deal with the Rays. Their 80-win season, the first with manager Ken Maka, would be a morose disappointment. The Phillies otherwise got off to an enthusiastic start in this series with an 11-4 victory over the Brewers, looking to maintain their emotional momentum from Game 3 of the Padres series. They proceeded to score 2 runs combined in the next 2 games. That's scuffling, I think we call it. And that's sort of exactly what the current Phillies are doing at the moment. Also facing some health issues, but far more of them, I think, than this team was. In that 11-4 win, punching the Brewers with 4 runs in the first and 5 runs in the fifth, Ryan Braun did his thing that he always does at Citizens Bank Park, homering off Jamie Moyer in the first inning, but Jason Wirth, Raul Ibanez, and Pedro Feliz strung together a hit parade to give the Phillies a 4-1 lead, and then the Phillies took advantage of some massive control issues by Brewers relievers in the fifth to score 5 runs on 4 walks and 2 wild pitches, one of which scored 2 runs thanks to a throwing error on Milwaukee catcher Jason Kendall.
That is a lot of wild pitches.
That is so, but it's so much, like, in one inning. What a disaster. Like, that's awful. Get a hold of yourselves, too.
Trevor Rosenthal-esque.
Yeah. Braun was only in his third year in the league in 2009.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't that suck?
He has been around forever. He loves sitting at Citizens Bank Park.
Honestly. If
Phillies fans have booed him forever, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm sure we've talked about that game where we kept booing him louder and louder, and he kept hitting home runs, and he hit 3 home runs, and everyone was like, stop booing him. It's only making him stronger. Yeah. If the National League gets the DH and Ryan Braun is 42 years old, the Phillies should absolutely sign him. I don't even care how much they pay for him. Get him in there. He's the only person for that job.
I dread the Brewers coming to Citizens Bank Park every year because of him.
Yeah. And it's not even like he's been great every year. He gets there and he's just, something in the air smells right to him, and he just beats the living hell out of them every time. This was very early in his Philly killing career in 2009. In 3 games at Citizens Bank. Oh, you're going to love this. In 3 games at Citizens Bank Park in 2009, Ryan Braun hit 800. I mean, you know, small sample size.
That up, making it up. That's not real.
We could just say he went 8 for 10 at the plate, and it doesn't sound as crazy, but it still sounds pretty crazy.
8 for 10 at the plate. That is
8 for 10
unheard of
with 3 home runs.
Oh, God.
Yeah. There's a reason they lost the next 2 games of this series, because Ryan Braun is just a monster.
Oh.
Going 2 for 4 with 2 runs scored, Shane Victorino was considered at this point to possibly have just rediscovered himself again at the plate, but the Phillies dropped the next 2 to the Brewers, with Joe Blanton improving but struggling, and Cole Hamels lasting only 3 1/3 innings in the finale, and also getting stung by a Prince Fielder line drive that gave him some shoulder issues and put his next start in question. Liz, every time I bring up Cole Hamels during a recap of the 2009 season, what happened? Do you get a chill? Do you get goosebumps? Does your nose start bleeding? I mean, you know it's not going to be good news, and you're the biggest Cole Hamels fan I know, so this has got to be unpleasant for you.
I just feel the deepest sadness for what I know is to come, because it was such a tough year for him. It was such a tough year, especially after the high of 2008. It was just,
we talk about
devastating. It was so bad. He was really, he struggled the whole season.
We talk about not remembering like big parts of this season, stuff like Ryan Braun hitting 800 at Citizens Bank Park. But the one thing that I always remember is his struggles. And that does make this, like, this is not a redemption story. Like, we'll come across a start or two, I'm sure, where he like looked really good and people thought, okay, he's back. But we know how his story ends, because that's one part of this season we will never forget, is that Cole Hamels just wasn't great. And you know what? If he had been the Cole Hamels that we had seen in 2008, probably win the World Series, you know, him and Cliff Lee leading the rotation instead of just Cliff Lee. And Pedro Martinez falling short. Well, yeah, that's way in the future. That hasn't happened.
Way in the future. I mean, it was peaks and valleys, because, like, I'm looking at his game log from 2009 right now, and there are a handful of, you know, there are at least 5 or 6, if not maybe like 7, 8 really good, like, vintage Cole Hamels starts. At least seven innings, 2 or 3 runs, usually 2, you know, a decent amount of strikeouts. It's like, He was in there.
Yeah.
He just couldn't do that consistently enough, because that guy that we love was in there.
Yeah.
We could see him every now and then.
Cole Hamels, and this was not isolated to 2009, but Cole Hamels was one of the biggest victims of not getting run support I've ever seen in my entire life. Cole Hamels could not rely on his offense. And I mean, a lot of that reputation probably comes from seasons when he was still with the team, but this wasn't the same team anymore from this championship era. But man, yeah, he did not have a lot of backup most seasons. So yeah, I'm saying it now because, you know, bringing up Cole Hamels is bad news in 2009. And unfortunately, there's just no like... there's just no like happy ending for him. There's no moment where it's like, and it all turned around. Like, nope, it just kept being shit.
No, he was miserable during the World Series. He was real tired and said some things, and
yeah,
Philadelphia did not like it, and thus ended the.
But that's.
Thus, I think permanent damage.
And we'll like we that, forgive but. It for like, you know, everybody's got feelings and whatever, and you have bad season. And I feel like he has certainly blamed the shorter off season because of all of the appearances he made as the MVP of the 2008 World Series and how that changed his career, even when baseball wasn't being played and everything was different. But what I didn't remember was how many times Cole Hamels' body got abused, broken, hit with baseballs going 100 miles an hour. Like he really took a beating this season health-wise, and we're obviously, you know, gonna get into that as the season goes on. But that Prince Fielder line drive, I mean, that's, I didn't remember that at all. That had to tickle a little bit. Well, Joe Blanton likened the Phillies to a car that was still trying to start, and it was suggested Oh, you know, but you know, sometimes when a car doesn't start, it's because the battery's dead and, you know, then you're in real trouble. But that was not the case this time. And it was suggested that perhaps there had been too many off days, too many rain delays, too much World Series celebration, or the pall cast over everything in regards to Harry's passing. All these things were said to possibly be to blame for the Phillies, mediocre at best start to the 2009 season. Whatever it was, the Phillies had played 14 games. They were 6-8, and they did not look like a team ready to defend their title yet. Meanwhile, in the minors, John Mayberry Jr. continued his campaign to reach the big club, but a young starter by the name of Kyle Kendrick might hold the answers to the Phillies. Might hold the answers to the Phillies' rotation woes. Andy Martino in the Inquirer said that Kyle Kendrick had a, quote, compelling storyline in the spring. But thankfully, once again, Rich Doobie, who I think might have hated Kyle Kendrick, threw some water on those expectations by saying, quote, he was told in no uncertain terms what to work on. He said Kyle Kendrick was throwing his changeup enough, but, quote, as far as strikes and balls, he still has some work to do. Doobie was saying these things because Kyle had a 9.20 ERA in the spring and four starts. Opponents in that period were hitting 4.15 against him. So, yeah, I'd say he had a little bit of work to do. I don't think they were turning to Kendrick as an answer just yet to any rotation problems. So, you know, at this point, listeners and Liz, you may be wondering, when does this team get good? This is a grim outlook here. This is a 6-8 team. You know, yeah, they're just two games under 500, but they're the defending world champions with a largely intact roster. Their ace doesn't look great. Their closer doesn't look great. Their offense doesn't look great. Charlie Manuel's pissed off that everybody missed so much spring training. Everyone's scrambling for excuses to explain why the team is playing so poorly. That minor leagues aren't offering a whole lot of answers right now. So, yeah, when does this team get hot? When is this team the one we remember? Well, the answer is with six games against the Marlins and Nationals at home right now. Shane Victorino was not getting on base, and he'd been targeted by fans and media as one of the culprits for the Phillies' sagging offense. The question became, with the number two hitter in the Phillies lineup not doing his job, would he get dropped in the lineup? Charlie Manuel, as you recall, Liz, wasn't a man who deviated from established protocol too often. That was mainly played a role this season with Brad Lidge, where I remember it's burned into my brain, Charlie Manuel saying over and over again, Brad Lidge is our closer. Brad Lidge is our closer. When people would ask, is Brad Lidge's job in danger? And he would say, Brad Lidge is our closer. And we just kind of had to sit with that. And, you know,
and we all died.
I was going to say, actually, I was going to say, and we're all still alive. But you're right. No, we did. We died. Yeah.
Now, I mean, I'm sure we'll get to it, but it was just, it was painful. I remember just staring at the computer, you know, really doing a lot of work at my job. Just like hands in the air. Like, why? Why? Why is it still happening?
Yeah, that was one of the moments where I foolishly believed I knew more than the manager. As a young baseball fan and up-and-coming writer, I felt like it was such rightful or righteous anger to be upset with Charlie that he wouldn't take Lidge out. And you know what? Other managers probably would have. Gabe Kapler certainly would have. And you know, leashes are a little shorter in an age where roles are formulated largely through analytics. But Charlie Manuel didn't really employ too much of that. And I think he went with his gut and he was like, I know Brad, he's our closer.
There's a difference between, like, I don't think it's necessarily that he didn't like analytics. I think a lot of managers would have pulled him as their closer because he had an ERA that was unimaginable.
Yeah, his ERA was just a screaming face. And this was before emojis, so it was a really upsetting face, you know.
I mean, this is his on the year, 7.21 ERA over 58 innings. 58 and two-thirds innings, a 7.21 ERA. That's so good. It's 67 appearances.
Yeah, 67 appearances. It's not like he didn't get a chance to make it right. You know, like it's another story that just doesn't have a happy ending in 2009.
Most managers would have removed him after maybe May or even just April. Like, it really was stunning to me that he didn't change it, because like he's our closer. We're not, you know, in big games, this is the guy we go to, and this guy is bad, but because he's our closer, we're going to send him
out.
But
you know what? The other component to this that I think played a big role was that Brad Lidge had just had maybe the best season for a closer of all time. 41 for 41 saves, 48 for 48, including the postseason, through the last pitch of the World Series. Obviously a big, big reason why this team went all the way in 2008. And I think that's fair to give him a longer, more leeway. You know, he certainly earned it. He earned the chance to prove that he could still be the closer. And he still, even with that chance, couldn't prove he deserved to be the closer, just because he just wasn't doing the job. He just wasn't doing it.
True. Yeah, I mean, as we move on, we can talk about when we think, hey, maybe now the leash. Now, maybe now we've gotten to the end of the closer leash. Maybe now we've hit that.
I look forward to scaring up all of our 10-year-old frustrations that we haven't felt in a decade all over again as we discuss the things that we used to talk about on social media that used to be the driving forces of our frustrations. Now we're worried about other things like day-to-day health, or why does my knee hurt? Or adult problems. Like, maybe I should buy a house someday. I don't know. But no, back
vegetables
then
are important.
Back then it was a lot of, why is Brad Lidge still the closer? And that was our main emotional.
That was the most important thing to us 10 years ago. time has passed.
Well, Charlie, like I said, he's a man who stuck with his guys. That's why he was a player's manager. And even when the questions came in, hey, are you going to drop Shane Victorino in the lineup? He, of course, didn't. And wouldn't you know it, when the score was 3-2 in the top of the ninth against the Marlins, after Eric Brunlett had knocked a run-scoring single to give the Phillies a chance, Victorino fired the first regular season grand slam of his career over the fence to give the Phillies a 6-3 lead. Chase Utley moments later put a 350-foot cherry on top, and the Phillies won 7-3, just like old times. Old times being against CC Sabathia in the playoffs. But that, I think, the Phillies could have just as easily lost a bunch of games after this, but they didn't. And this really kind of served as the big turnaround moment, that grand slam. But you know what? There's a chance the Phillies had a little secret weapon, because you might say they were lacking in motivation, perhaps. Maybe that was why they were scuffling so much at the beginning of the season. But, you know, great news, Liz, because according to a page in the local newspaper, there was a at the Wachovia Center, as it was known at the time in 2009. Oh. There was an ad for about a 2 months in the future from mid-April for a Get Motivated business seminar. And, you know, it had a lot of great guests coming to town to tell people from Philadelphia how to just get in charge of their lives and just, you know, get out of bed every morning with a zip in their step. Speakers like world famous soldier and statesman General Colin Powell talking about take charge leadership. President and CEO of Forbes Incorporated, Steve Forbes, to deliver a talk called America's Promise, Your Keys to Growth and Opportunity. Philadelphia Eagles All-Pro quarterback Donovan McNabb to talk about how to sharpen your competitive edge. Is it by air guitaring, perhaps? And don't forget, Liz, America's mayor, Rudy Giuliani, talking about the tenacity to persevere, how to make it through any crisis, but also being advertised.
I'm lying your ass off.
Like crawling out of a gutter and just making shit up on television.
Like, It's like the human version of an inflatable rat.
Hey, now that's an insult to our local inflatable rat population, which is prominent and respected.
I'm sorry, unions.
But you know who else was apparently slated to appear at this? And I don't know. I have a hard time envisioning this seminar happening. I don't know. This almost feels like it has to be a joke or something. And I'm too dense to understand it.
But pre-recorded messages is my guess.
Yeah, that's probably closer to what we're dealing with, because the Get Motivated seminar is also very proud to present world champion Philadelphia Phillies Cole Hamels discussing your game plan for success, and Charlie Manuel, how to lead your team to victory. So this was appearing in the Inquirer, a Philadelphia newspaper, but they still said, you know, Cole Hamels is the Phillies' 25-year-old Southpaw pitching ace who was voted MVP of both the National League Championship Series and the 2008 World Series. It just seems like people would know that, you know. It just seems like people would be aware of who he is at this point. But you know, maybe it was worth buying a ticket, going by the Wachovia Center and hearing him talk about things like you can be an MVP in your industry, and how to wake up every day and live your passion, and what must you do to maintain poise under pressure. As I don't have a hard time picturing him doing this, actually, with the philanthropy and the other things that he and his wife have taken on after their careers. I can see him being a motivational speaker to some extent. Charlie Manuel, obviously, he gave a speech in the locker room every year at spring training, like famously. But like, why would he want to do this? That's probably the part they must have been paying him.
They're going
to
pay him
ungodly amounts of money to do. Like, he was going to touch on how to motivate and inspire your team, how you can achieve your true potential, and the importance of IRA, integrity, responsibility, and accountability. You know, it's tough to imagine Charlie Manuel getting the mic at the Wachovia Center and like coherently speaking to all of these people who apparently might not even be baseball fans. I don't know. Would you buy a ticket to this?
No. Yeah, God, no, are you high?
God, no.
I wouldn't. No, not in a million years would I waste any time or money on that, because this is for people who I don't really need a baseball player to tell me any of those things. Like, I just don't. Like, I don't get why you would need a sports figure to tell you any of those things, because sports stuff is actually kind of really specific.
I got to tell you, I'm not going to buy anything Donovan McNabb tries to sell me. I think he is such a, and this has nothing to do with his local, you know, the most recent form of drama he managed to scare up in Philadelphia by criticizing. That was so bizarre. If the Eagles don't win the Super Bowl with Carson Wentz in 2 years, they should get another quarterback. It was sort of like, okay, that's not okay.
That's not advice or really anything. That's barely an opinion.
I don't think I'd buy a whole lot of his shtick. He's just kind of a facade to me. As like, yeah, quarterback, blah blah blah, Eagles history, blah blah blah. But like, as far as motivating me to do something, I don't think Donovan McNabb could convince me to do something I wasn't prepared to do. And you know what? According to this ad, no videos, no pre-recorded messages. It says all speakers live and in person, all in one day, 8 a.m. to 4:45 p.m. And it's apparently only $4.95 a person, or send your entire office for $19. I don't understand how these things work, Liz. I might just be out of my element here.
No, these are,
or a scam.
Yeah, this is the type of thing that you see a lot in like the motivational speaking business world, because the point is that you go and you buy a bunch of the merchandise, you buy a bunch of books, you buy like leadership train, you know, office leadership training stuff. You know, the point is for you to go and spend almost no money doing it, but leave having spent hundreds of dollars on merchandise and other, you know, opportunities. It's stupid. Though I'll be honest, it's something I can also see Cole Hamels doing easily, if only because he made a lot of weird decisions in this stage of his career.
He did. He's made some strange decisions. That's true.
Yeah. Like after they had they had two kids and then they adopted a third, I think after that, they really, they stopped doing these types of, like, there was that weird ad with him and Heidi in an apartment they didn't own. Mm-hmm.
And they're like wearing just white clothes, right?
Yeah, wearing just white clothes. She's pregnant. Then there's that other one with, like, they're posing with other people's kids.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's Ted Berg that has the famous thread or blog post of embarrassing Cole Hamill's pictures, which is every time I remember it and look at it, it is my joy, because he was just such a derp in his early career.
Well, since he wasn't doing much on the mound in 2009, maybe there's a chance Cole Hamill's practiced his get motivated speech on his teammates, because they were certainly motivated by this point. And we'll tell you everything about that right after the break. Well, Liz, as the Flyers, get this, got eliminated from the playoffs by the Penguins by blowing a 3-0 lead, and columnists were saying it's going to take more than a tweak to fix this team. Stop me if you've heard this one. Chan Ho Park started game two for the Phillies in South Florida against the Marlins, and not only pitched 7 innings, he hit a solo shot to make it 2-0 early after Ryan Howard hit a home run. The game wound up going into extras. The Phillies got RBIs from Jason Wirth and Chase Utley, and they won 6-4. In all 8 of their wins so far this season, they had to come from behind and had a league-leading 40 runs scored in the 7th inning or later. Charlie Manuel got himself ejected from this game, arguing with the umpires just before Brad Lidge struck out Cody Ross to end the game with the bases loaded, of course. That's the other thing. It just, every time Brad Lidge entered the game, it just felt like something terrible could happen or was about to happen. Yeah, you were bracing yourself a lot in 2009. But how about that league leading 40 runs scored in the 7th inning or later? I mean,
that's some terrifying yet fun baseball.
Yeah, very fun. And when you have a team that can do that, they are very fun to watch. I feel like we've seen the alternative so many times. And I don't mean just like not fun teams. I mean teams that are giving up those runs late. And man, being on the other side of that sucks.
That is not fun.
Well, in a series defined by close wins, the Phillies got a little sick of that formula and the next day crushed the Marlins at Dolphin Stadium 13-2. The Fish had started the season 10-1, which I don't remember that at all. I mean, again, it's just 11 games, but 10-1 is a pretty notable start. But now they lost 6 in a row.
The Marlins.
Jamie Moyer had his best command and made it an easy win despite no home runs from the Phillies, even though they scored 13 runs. And Pedro Feliz keyed the offense, going 3-for-5. So they sweep the Marlins out of South Florida. People are thinking, all right, this is finally the ship is being righted. They head home to Philadelphia, where the crowds were slightly less rabid after the series sweep on the road. The Phillies and Nationals whacked at each other over 7 innings until Nick Johnson and Adam Dunn hit 2 home runs in the 8th to give the Phillies the Nationals an 11-7 lead. Until the bottom of the 8th, when the legend of first half 2009 Raul Ibanez really solidified itself. Ibanez crushed a grand slam to give the Phillies a 13-11 lead and win. And I mean, we'll get to Raul in a second, but just flashing back real quick, this is kind of like the only other way I define the Nationals in my head is, the Bryce Harper era Nationals, which, despite the obvious, kind of still are that team. Because I don't really mean he's not the reason. It's just that, like, that era of when they got good, which happened to be right when Bryce Harper got promoted. Well, it didn't just happen to be. It was partially because Bryce Harper got promoted. And before that, it was just a lot of just Nick Johnsons and Adam Dunns out there. Ryan Zimmerman was like a young guy who was trying to earn a starting spot. And they were such a beatable, crappy little basement team playing in RFK, just looking like shit all the time. And I don't really remember them crawling up through the standings too much. It was kind of like they were this beatable team and then they were the best team in the NL East. And I don't really remember the transition. I don't do you? Like, at this point, they didn't even have the Walgreens logo yet.
No, the transition was 2011. It was 2011 when they signed Jason
Wirth. Oh, Jason Wirth.
Jason Wirth is when it started. Harper didn't debut till 2012, and they had sort of like a year where they were getting ready a little bit. Like, when did Strasburg
debut? Yeah, that's a good point. When Jason Wirth went there and they weren't the best yet and he struggled, it was just like, ha, take that, you know, like, I guess you'll regret this forever, as if like no other baseball would ever be played in history. And his $126 million deal was just for like that 1 year and he blew it somehow.
By the way, Steven Strasburg is 30 and has been married since 2010.
Wow.
I know, like Buster Posey has been married forever. Like some of these guys that we remember, they've been married for a long time. Every time I see that, it's just kind of jarring. It's kind of off topic, but I was just looking up Steven Strasburg when he debuted, and he was up in 2010 for a little bit, and he was around in 2011 for a little bit. I know that, I think one of those years he had Tommy John.
No, it's not off topic, because every, you know, part of this podcast is, first of all, just remembering names of players that we haven't heard in forever.
Hearing me go, oh, God, as you say their names.
And part of it is realizing how old people are either now or were then, and, you know, being sad for a moment. Did you know Vlad Guerrero Jr. is 20 years old? Do you know that's what 20-year-olds look like now?
Take a rock and kill me. end it for me, please. By the way, I do want to say, in the time since we've started this podcast, the Phillies are losing.
I'm just going to wait till the end.
because we mentioned Starlin Castro earlier, and he hit a two-run home run off of Hector Neris.
Hot damn. What a bullpen. I think baseball is the finest sport. Well, you know what? We're very passionate. Alex
Michael wonders when the hell someone's going to give him an offer. Oh, no, he's a starter. We're talking bullpen. That's Craig Kimbrel, the bird guy.
Yeah, just pick one and sign him. Good Lord, we could use help wherever.
Seriously, either.
Well, something else we're passionate about in Philadelphia is the ooh sound, which Raul Ibanez allowed us to make. And this is the first account I could see of that chant being written about in the paper. Assuring people it was not booze. No one was being booed. It was just people saying Raul's name, and they would be saying
in Philadelphia.
You do. And they were saying it loudly and longly in the first half as Raul Ibanez made himself known, which he certainly did after hitting that grand slam to beat the Nationals 13-11. Brad Lidge, who sucked, got an MRI to see if that was the problem, saying his arm, quote, didn't feel great. I can confirm that it did not feel great to see Lidge pitch in 2009. Apparently there was a fluid buildup, but no tears, so he couldn't blame anything on that. Speaking of blame, I don't know why Victorino was getting blamed for all these offensive problems. Jimmy Rollins was hitting 195 18 games into the season. So I'm saying that as if I'm sure Jimmy Rollins was getting yelled at the time. Other than making the ooh sound, Philadelphia, their other passion is blaming Jimmy Rollins for everything.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, James, just him.
By the way, Jimmy Rollins in the booth the other night, terrific. Just
really superb.
As natural a fit as you would have assumed, and we have assumed. I mean, I think it might have been you and I talking about how a dream new Phillies podcast or a broadcast team, Kristen Karbach, Jimmy Rollins in the booth, Shane Victorino, wandering stadium guy. I do love Greg Murphy. I'm not in a hurry to see him go anywhere.
Here's the problem with Shane is that he talks too fast.
Yeah, that's true.
He talks too fast. And I think for people not familiar with it, since he's from Hawaii, the accent it's very different than something people are used to hearing on the mainland. So I think it would take a little bit of getting used to, a little bit of speech training for Shane to slow it down a little bit.
That's a really good point, because you're right. There are times when he talks like it sounds like there's a
on fire.
Yeah, like he's on fire, or there's just like a tornado coming out of his mouth. It's crazy. Well, anyway, the next night, Chase Utley hit two home runs. Ibanez hit another home run, bringing that ooh sound back into the ballpark. And Pedro Feliz hit a 3-run shot. The Phillies won again, 7-1. They did lose that night in a way when, Cole Hamels got hurt again, spraining his left ankle during his start. Before he left the game, he tried to stay in. They let him throw a pitch to see how it would feel. He hated how it felt. He kind of stomped around the mound in a circle. He talked to Rich Doobie, threw the ball into the air, and left the game. According to the Inquirer, quote, face tight and head down. He had apparently been going through a repeated cycle of feeling annoyed, embarrassed, alarmed, and hopeful, wrote Andy Martino. Just the beginning of Cole Hamels' problems. And again, this is just the end of April. So he's already had two different injuries in getting hit by a line drive and then spraining his ankle. His pitches aren't going where he wants them to go. He doesn't have the command. He doesn't have the velocity. And the Phillies closed out April with a 4-1 loss to the Nationals in a game Matt Stairs called kind of boring. They did something. Yeah, he's probably right. You know, losing 4-1 to the worst team in the division, pretty boring. Yep. So they did miss sweeping two teams in a row, but it seemed pretty widely agreed that the fire was back. They had won 5 of 6. They had their issues, but Hamels wasn't going to miss a start from his mild sprain. Lidge had no structural damage, and Carlos Ruiz was beginning his rehab assignment in Lehigh Valley. So things were really looking up, and you know, and for good reason. May was going to be a good month for this team. June, they were going to run into some trouble in the back half, but you know, we got a long season ahead of us, and the 2009 Phillies are going to journey with us the rest of the way, as well as the 2019 Phillies, who are hopefully going to be just as fun. Well, in any case, Liz, that's what was going on in 2009 around this time. Do you have anything else to add before we bid farewell?
Let me see. I know recently was the anniversary of Chase Utley's first MLB hit. I had it up in my browser, and I think I closed it because my browser was about to crash. But his grand slam with Harry's call was tweeted out, and that was fun. So go look that up if you would like some fun memories of just baby Cole Hamels trucking around the bases like he's being chased. It's like he's being chased by something.
Speaking of tweeted out Phillies videos, because today was Throwback Thursday at the ballpark and the Phillies were wearing their throwback powder blues, the Phillies Twitter account tweeted out at least one, I don't know, maybe they did more, Phillies commercials from the 80s, which if you've been on YouTube looking for Phillies videos, you've almost certainly seen suggested to you. And if you're like me, you've fallen down a hole of watching a bunch of old Phillies ticket ads. And I got to tell you, I kind of commented on this earlier, but they're like these weird mid 80s commercials starring players who, to their credit, do an okay job performing. Richie Ashburn's in one, Juan Samuel's in that one too. And they're like, you watch it and you see what's happening and you can see like, okay, this is a commercial for the Phillies, but then it ends and like you take 1 second and think, what were they doing in that commercial? Why did any of that happen? And you know, obviously it's best not to think about it because it was the '80s and people making TV were like, all right, let's just do the rest of the cocaine in the wheelbarrow and then make some television. Let's do it. You know, they didn't ask questions.
Like everyone was on cocaine. You could put pretty much anything you want on television. Like Miami Vice was on TV, guys. There's a show about four, you know, middle-aged women living in Miami. Like they would put anything on television.
It was just so cheesy and bizarre. Like in the one they tweeted out, they're like playing a trivia game where Richie Ashburn is asking questions about current baseball players, so like any one of them could have also been an answer to the question. Then they all just get up and leave when they get the answer wrong, and you don't know, like, you're just like, wait, where are they going? Not a natural part of talking to, all right, whatever. So
is this a game show? What are they winning? What are they losing?
So those are always a lot of fun as long as you don't think too hard about it. Well, as the Phillies lose to the worst team in their division, 3-1, we'll leave you till next time on Continued Success. We'll talk about the next series of events in the 2009 Phillies season, as well as any other current Phillies news that catches our attention. Don't forget to subscribe, download, and rate all the podcasts that are a part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hittin' Season with John Stolness and The Dirty Inning with myself and Trevor Strunk, of which there is a new episode that is hot out of the oven, and we're going to have our Patreon firing up for both extra content related to that episode, so extra Dirty Inning content, as well as extra Continued Success content. Liz and I are going to be reviewing another trashy, sexy romance novel that is sure to be full of erections, and we cannot wait to bring that horrifying story to you. on our
just people unsubscribe en masse from our Patreon
on the Patreon. It's just $5 to hear us talking about topics like these that are most assuredly of your interest.
Talking about dicks, everyone.
But in any case, we thank you for listening. We thank you for subscribing, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.